Welcome to Funny Books with Aaron and Polly. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul, and it is just us.
Yeah, I know. We're going old school today. Just the two of us, Paul, and I won't even sing. That's how happy I am. I'm not going to afflict you with my singing.
I mean, it's date night. We left the kids at home. And then Aaron and I went to the movies to see Fantastic Four. But we'll talk about that later.
And then after that, we got a motel room so that we could do the really dirty stuff.
Yeah, a motel, because we really only needed an hour.
That's right. Well, yeah, to include cleanup time. Yeah,
exactly. 58 minutes of cleanup time.
Have you noticed that Kevin Feige is doing the news tour? I mean, I feel like there's a new Kevin Feige message every day about Marvel movies.
You know, I feel like he has become front and center as a result of James Gunn being so front and center in the DCU media gauntlet. Because Kevin Feige used to not be, you know, I mean, he would do interviews and stuff, but he certainly wasn't like that out there. But then James Gunn is out there like he's literally in the movie.
Yeah.
So I think that's why Kevin Feige's out there. But, you know, yeah, you can't go anywhere without Pedro Pascal or the cast in the movie or Kevin Feige. Like, obviously Matt Shankman, I think, directed the film.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that dude looks like. He's not in any of this stuff. But
I think Feige's got to be out there. I don't know that it's as much James Gunn. I mean, I'm sure that the James Gunn of it all doesn't help anything for Feige. I think it's all the damage control that he's having to do in relation to the state of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, right? I mean, Thunderbolts, while being, you know, well regarded, did not perform like they thought it would and like they hoped it would. And
that's an interesting thing for me, the Thunderbolts, because I get why it didn't do well, because despite being good, it really, Thunderbolts was a movie that required a great deal of build of research to know who the hell those characters were, because most of them were introduced in television shows, you know, or you know, even Florence Pugh was in Black Widow and Hawkeye, right? Both of which were released on Disney Plus. So I mean, I do see why, you know, the general audience would not necessarily want to watch that. Because, you know, like, they don't know who Wyatt Russell, you know, and U.S. Agent are. They don't know, you know, all these characters. So the guy from Stranger Things.
Right.
Red Guardian.
Yeah. Yes. There you go.
You know, they don't know who these characters are. So I get it. It's just a bummer because it actually was quite a good movie.
Yeah, it was. And I watched all those things. So I don't know how hard it was for somebody who hadn't seen it to enjoy those movies, but I thought the Thunderbolts film was surprisingly good. I was wildly entertained in that movie. But you know, I think that's what Feige is having to address, is, you know, Marvel post Endgame has really kind of found itself in a strange space where they're, you know, they've done too much on television apparently. And their movies really haven't landed because they retired the A-team, right? You know, all of the actors who got them where they were, or put them at the top, aren't really participating anymore. And so what do you do? What's your next thing? And I just don't think they had done a successful enough job establishing, you know, the next round of characters. And I think, you know, I don't think you can overstate it enough, but, you know, the death of Chadwick Boseman, you know, really did him in, because he was going to be essentially your new Captain America. He was going to be the new heart and soul of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And, you know, his passing, you know, really did a number on, oh my God, where do we plant our flag? You know, and, you know, sadly, there was not a character out of the Wakanda movies that, you know, could really take his place, who had that charisma that Chadwick Boseman had. you know, so you they've got a legitimate issue with what you know is present now, and we'll talk about kind of the different footing when we talk about our Fantastic Four experience. But one of the things that I saw this week that was reported was that, you know, on the other side of Secret Wars, Feige confirmed that they're rebooting the universe, and I just think that's a huge mistake.
I agree.
I think if you wanted to ensure that Marvel never made a dollar again, I think the way you do it is rebooting the universe. I think crowds are going to look at it as an opportunity to get out of Marvel. I think they're going to enjoy the return of Downey Jr., you know, playing another character in the Marvel universe. Enjoy the promised return of Chris Evans and Chris Hemsworth and others to the two Avengers movies that are coming. And then they're going to go, okay, that was fun. I'm out. You know, kind of like, you know, the way we have done on certain books. You know, we're like, okay, that's enough for me. I'm out. I don't think they'll ever capture that in the bottle again, because people are going to feel like they've wasted time, you know, in you know, all this investment into Marvel. And you just wipe the slate clean and give me a new guy playing Steve Rogers. You know, it's one thing to give a new guy the title of Captain America, that's a title that can change person to person. That's one thing. It all stays in continuity. It makes the building blocks of that story meaningful. I think they moved too fast to swap out Steve Rogers. I mean, I get it. The timing is right there in game, but I just don't feel like spent enough time with Steve Rogers.
I think that's the thing. Like, you have to do it at some point, right? You'll have to reboot those characters at some point. I feel like it's a delicate balance, but I do think it's too soon.
Oh, way too soon. Way too soon. I think
those characters are still so prevalent as those actors in the zeitgeist that, you know, people will not embrace new actors yet. It's not James Bond. You know, it's not Batman. I mean, even Batman, right? They struggle with Batman and Superman because it's like, wasn't Henry Cavill Superman just a few years ago? And it's like, it really wasn't. I mean, Man of Steel was, at this point, 15 years ago?
Yeah.
Right?
But you have to let those characters lay fallow for a while and, you know, be out of the pop culture zeitgeist for a while. And, you know, like it or not, on the Superman side, you know, all of the Zack Snyder drama kept Henry Cavill kind of front and center. And then you had his, you know, end credit appearances in various movies. You know, that kept him fresh.
James Gunn's been talking shit about that too. I don't know if you've seen the interviews, but James Gunn is like, you know, certain people made their own decisions and I was the one who had to have to talk to Henry Cavill and let him know that was never the case. And I'm like, why was it never the case though?
Right.
You know, that's the thing. Like, why was it never the case? You know, why did you feel like you knew better than literally the entire online fandom that wanted more Henry Cavill and, you know, lost their minds when he came back? I mean, yes, obviously Superman is doing well enough, right? It's not doing anywhere near as well as Man of Steel or Batman versus Superman, but, you know, it's doing well enough. Uh-huh. And, you know, but like, you know, they're like, yeah, there was no way we were going to bring Henry Cavill back as Superman. I'm like, why though? You know, and I mean, obviously I sound like a Snyder boy and I'm not that kind of crazy Snyder person, but I do find it frustrating when it's kind of like, and we're going to talk about Fantastic Four here because this is actually something where I've been proven wrong. You know, the entire world wanted John Krasinski as Reed Richards. And, you know, then they're like, yeah, we'll give him to you and we're going to fucking kill him in 5 minutes.
Right.
And cast someone else. And it's like, but why do you feel like you know better than everyone who's asking? You know, it's just interesting to me.
I think that James Gunn, you know, had the bias of, I want to be in charge of my thing. I want me to have stood up my thing and executed my thing and get credit for having done my thing, as opposed to running with what the other guy gave me. I think that was a personal bias. I think that, you know, it's an ego thing that I know better, you know, and I do think there's some truth that, you know, creators don't owe you what you want. You know, they owe you what they feel like you need. And, you know, there's a certain level of art to that, and I respect that. But, you know, there are times where it's like, just give me what I fucking want. You know, just give me the thing.
Especially in this genre. You know, that's the thing. In this genre,
I'm a fan, service me.
You know, what's interesting to me, you know, because this, you know, lots of news has been coming out over these past few weeks around DC and Marvel and you know, the cinematic universe. Cinematic universes. And apparently, you know, that whole Michael B. Jordan Superman movie, you know, got scrapped because the head of Warner Brothers, David Zaslav, whatever his name is, said, you know, it was too woke, right? And, you know, it just didn't, it, like, it was, yeah, he felt like it was just like too much down, you know, a diversity path. And two things I thought, you know, as it relates to that news item. One, just such a short-sighted, stupid way of thinking, because Michael B. Jordan is literally one of the hottest actors.
I think Michael B. Jordan's going to be the next Tom Cruise. I'll be perfectly honest. He's
picky about what he chooses, and what he chooses is all excellent.
And he has so much control over how he appears on screen. He immerses himself in the parts. I mean, I think Michael B. Jordan is our neck. Number one, I think he's one of the few movie stars we actually have. Not, you know, not a movie celebrity, a movie star, someone who can open a movie. You know, you put Michael B. Jordan's name on it and it's going to perform, right?
Yeah.
There are damn few of those left. Tom Cruise being one of them. If I was a film executive and I had an opportunity to do anything that Michael B. Jordan wanted to do, I would say, here's our money. Let's go do this thing. You know, I would be all over that. And I think people ignore Michael B. Jordan at their own peril, because he is huge. He's going to get bigger. You know, he's just going to get bigger.
You know, and I was hopeful that this, what's his name? This Glenn Powell guy, especially because he has that Tom Cruise connection. I was thinking, you know, he started his career making some pretty solid choices in films with, you know, the sequel to Twisters and Top Gun Maverick, and like he's making some good choices. And I was like, maybe he, you know, and he's literally learning from Tom Cruise. So I'm like, maybe he'll be like the next Tom Cruise. But then he kind of seems to just say yes to everything now.
Right.
And you can go down one of two paths. You know, you can be that guy that uses your fame to take advantage while you can and just say yes to everything. And I feel like he's going down that path. You know, I saw him in the trailer for the new Running Man.
That actually looks pretty good.
I don't think it'll do well.
I did not care for the original Running Man. There are some moments that I find amusing with Richard Dawson, but I did not care for the original Running Man. But the trailer for this thing looks great. I think it looks great.
But so. I think you're right about Michael B. Jordan. I think he really has that potential, as long as he keeps playing his cards right.
It kills me. You know, I think making a Superman movie where Clark Kent is a black man is a mistake. You know, yes. I just don't think the public would ever accept that. But, you know, when you're talking about doing President Superman, when you're talking about doing, what was it, Valzad? What's his name?
Yeah, Valzad.
Valzad. Man, 100% there. I would love to see that movie. And I think that I think that's a license to print money, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I mean,
think,
look what happened with you know, Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah,
right. You know,
I just don't understand people. I truly don't. My opinion, I always liked Michael B. Jordan. You know, I saw him in The Wire, saw him in Friday Night Lights, the TV show. You know, I'd seen him in this and that. But I tell you what, when I saw Creed, I was like, oh, shit, this guy, you know, I want to see everything he's in, everything. And I think I'm not the only guy who felt that way. You know, I felt like, you know, when he emerged in Creed, he was marking territory, like, okay, this is my space now, you know. Yep. And he was fantastic in Black Panther. against Chadwick Boseman, who, I mean, you have these two magnificent presences in that film that transcended the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, Black Panther's just a fucking great movie, right? Yeah. It's, I mean, Marvel superhero movie or not, it's just a great film. And it's a great film because well-written, well-directed, and you've got these two superstars at the height of their power in that film. And I got to tell you, you know, Michael B. Jordan, his star is just going to get brighter. Just going to get brighter. Absolutely.
Totally agree.
And the problem is, bringing it back to the original topic, is Marvel is putting themselves in a place that they have to go and capture that lightning in a bottle all over again. You know, they're going to have to find a new Iron Man. They're going to have to find a new Steve Rogers. They're going to have to find a new Thor, you know? And I think that's a huge mistake. I think the way you do it for now, until Steve Rogers it has been, you know, fallow for a while, I think you continue to have your new Captain America, and, you know, you have your Falcon cap and then your Bucky cap, you know, you move that way. I think Thor writes itself because somebody else could be worthy to pick up the hammer, right? And you could have your Jane Foster Thor or some other person Thor. I think that you could have somebody else, you know, I don't think Ironheart's the answer because I don't think that has performed the way they expected.
No, but I did watch it. And I know we haven't talked, but I did watch it and I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a good show. It was a good show. I just think there are some character problems in the way they have written her. I think that the comic book character is much more of a hero than the character we saw in the show. But I think you could absolutely have somebody else pick up the Iron Man suit, right? I think retreading those stories so recently is going to be wildly ineffective for them. And I agree. That's where I'll put my button on that part of the conversation.
All right. Well, yeah, that was a lot of unplanned conversation, dear listener. You know, because we won't find out about any upcoming Marvel or DC cinematic movies at this year's Comic-Con, because all of those companies abstained from presenting at Comic-Con this year. All the big ones abstained. You know, I mean, there were some presentations and obviously some comic news flowing out, but nothing really major in the comic news space. And that's not to say that I'm not excited about some of the property, you know, some of the comics things they discussed, but nothing that's like changing the world, right? DC announced their next big crossover, which is DCKO, which we'll talk about here when we talk about this week's new comics. But outside of that, you know, not a ton. But one thing that I did want to mention, Aaron, that you may not be aware of, is last night, as of this recording, there was a panel on the upcoming Predator movie, Predator Badlands.
That trailer is badass.
So hot. So
hot. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I just love that trailer. If that's all I get, if I don't get this, I'm pretty happy because it's an awesome trailer.
It is.
Yeah.
They did have a panel, you know, showing the first 15 minutes of the movie last night. Oh. Apparently, you know, went well, you know, everyone's excited about it. However, it was also announced in that panel that a new ending has been tacked on to Predator Killer of Killers as of last night. You know, we talked about the animated movie recently.
And that was the Killer of Killer was the animated film, right?
Yeah, the animated film on Hulu.
I gotcha.
They have tacked on a new end.
Huh. So I have to go and rewatch it.
You can literally skip to the middle of the credits. Or I can tell you right
here. Is it an end credit scene?
Yeah, it's an end credit scene. So, you know, it's spoilers if you're not wanting to know this. But it's like 5 seconds long, Aaron. It's not much. The new ending that has been added to Killer of Killers is that, you know, in the final scene, you see that Viking lady being, you know, kind of carted through the warehouse of people who have beaten predators before. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you see the character who was the lead in Prey, right? The Native American character who was the leader in Prey. Mm-hmm. And the new ending that has been added on is that the camera continues to pan, Aaron, and you see both Danny Glover and Arnold Schwarzenegger in cryostasis.
Oh.
And apparently Schwarzenegger has given his blessing to, you know, to continue stories featuring Dutch. And I'm assuming Danny Glover could give a shit. You know, but maybe they'll do some voice work. I don't know, but you know, they have definitely according to Dan Trachtenberg, who seems to kind of be taking over this whole, you know, Predator shebang, they have plans.
That sounds great.
Yeah, pretty psyched about it. That sounds great. Actually.
And you know, I would be open to recasting both of those roles. I mean, as much as I love Danny Glover and Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, understanding that they are no longer in their 40s, you know.
I mean, we literally have Patrick Schwarzenegger out there. Like,
yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Like, there's ways to do this, right? Yeah. Yeah. They did it in that whole Monarch show with
that's Wyatt. That's exactly what I was thinking, like, with Wyatt Russell.
There's a way to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but, man. I mean,
I'm psyched about that.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm down for that.
Hell yeah.
I keep that Badlands trailer, which I got to see again yesterday when I saw Fantastic Four, is just fantastic.
I just love the tact that they took with it, where she's like half a robot, you know, strapped to the back of a Predator going through the Badlands.
It's like Chewbacca hauling C-3PO around Cloud City.
Exactly. It's something you genuinely don't see in big budget cinema anymore. I mean, that's something you would see in a cartoon or an anime.
Right.
Right. And you know, the visual feast that trailer is, I'm so excited for that film. Definitely looking forward to seeing it on a big screen.
Yeah, that looks great. That looks great. I cannot remember the name of the film, but the trailer with Leonardo DiCaprio and Sean Penn.
Oh, it's like One Thing After Another.
One Battle
After Another, yeah.
Yeah, that looks so good.
Yeah, it does. There's some good flicks coming out.
Yeah, yeah, it looks really good. Looks really good.
But before we talk about this week's major new release of Fantastic Four, I did want to talk about one of the comics I read this week. Mm-hmm. Especially because, you know, I mentioned DC KO, and the DC titles are leading up to that. So I actually read two comics this week. I bought four. I've only read two. I read Superman, the latest issue of Superman, which is Superman issue 28. And I also read Justice League Unlimited. The latest issue is Justice League Unlimited number 9. I read Justice League Unlimited because it's an epilogue to the We Are Yesterday storyline that I really actually quite enjoyed, featuring Gorilla Grodd and, you know, time displaced heroes and villains. I actually surprisingly really enjoyed it, and so this was the epilogue. Both books, Aaron, were drawn by Dan Mora. So I read one after the other. I'm like, kind of wish Dan Mora drew every DC book, because this is lovely. Like, it just feels, you know, it's kind of like watching a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. It's like, you know, there's like a house feel across their movies. That's how reading these two books in a row.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, wow, these books feel really tied together because it's literally the same artist. Right? You're getting the same Superman. You're getting the same, you know, characters visually.
His depiction of Martha Kent in this issue of Superman.
Oh, fantastic.
I just love her. I was like, oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. You know, she just has so much character, and, you know, doesn't look like a caricature, but just so much character. I just absolutely love her. And I loved his drawings, the Legion. And, you know, Superman he looks so heroic. And you know, legendary, iconic. I love everything about the artwork in this book.
And here's the thing about this art, you know, the thing about Dan Mora, which I find most interesting, is he doesn't skimp, right, in his art. And I really recommend, and you know, maybe if it's on special or something like that, I do recommend picking up the We Are Yesterday crossover. He doesn't draw all of it, but he does draw, you know, the finale, and he's drawing the epilogue. And I have no idea how he's doing both of these books, because Justice League Unlimited is taking the same tact as the TV show, which is you just have a shit ton of characters. And I have no idea how he's doing both books featuring all these different characters. You know, because in the other book, you've got the Legion of Superheroes too. And it's just mind blowing. And I'm aware he's probably doing his work digitally. But, you know, it doesn't look like digital art. I know it is, right? Very few people are doing pencil to paper anymore, except the old guard. But, like, even digitally, it's not like, you know, he's not reusing things. He's not using, like, you know, he's not like Stepan Sejic, right, who was doing like Witchblade and a couple of titles right. at the same time, where you could right. tell it was digital art, but he was, you know, you could tell like it was digital in a way that you could tell it was digital. This doesn't feel like digital art. You know?
Well, it's because it feels like, I think it's because he is so grounded in analog illustration, mm-hmm. you know, that his digital work has that look. And so when he's, you know, working on his pad, you know, he's drawing with a light pen, you know, and he's, you know, sketching out those shapes in that space. So, I mean, it does look like it's drawn as it is. I am very entertained by his storytelling. His visual yeah. storytelling is compelling. You know, it is really easy for artists to skimp on like a 9-panel page, and he doesn't. His 9-panel pages are so full of illustration and power. And I mean, I look at this one panel, and it's 9-panel page. So, you know, it's a tiny little box, and Superman is, you know, blasting forward in rage, and you feel that power in this one teeny little box. It's fantastic. I love the work he's doing in this book. I think he's really, you know, hit his, you know, zenith in terms of ability. He's really in that sweet spot right now.
Agreed. And I will tell you, you know, I know Wayne has, and unfortunately Wayne's not with us this week because he hasn't seen Fantastic Four. So we say, you stay asleep.
Yeah. You stay away, Wayne.
But, you know, I know he's dropped out of this book because he didn't really care for the way the Lex Luthor storyline wrapped up. And I didn't either. Right. Yeah. I didn't really care for the way that storyline wrapped up. But the epilogue I enjoyed, and, you know, I enjoyed the storyline. I just didn't really care with this whole like return to status quo that they did for some of those characters. But I really loved this issue.
That's a good book. And I love, you know, his encounter with Imra, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, he's stunned that this isn't the Saturn girl he knows. Right.
Yeah. Because Darkseid has altered. Right. Darkseid has infested, you know, both the absolute universe and I guess the future of this DC universe. So the Legion of Superheroes is, you know, the Legion of Darkseid or the League of Darkseid. Yeah. And so, you know, when these characters visit Clark, it's not the same characters that you know, or that he knows. And, they put him through the paces, right? You're like, it's almost an injustice moment, right? Where, you know, his friends are on the watchtower, and the watchtower like is crinkled up and kills everyone inside kind of thing. But then, and then Martha gets zapped by lightning. But then you realize it's all in his head. But you know, it's so good.
And that's the images that were in his head. Before a moment there, I was like, holy cow, did we just kill off Martha Kent after I was just really digging the character design that Dan Moore used? I mean, because when I first opened it up and I was reading that page, God, I love how he's drawn Martha Kent. And then, you know, two pages later, you know, zap.
It didn't occur to me it was all in his head, right? Like, when this stuff was happening, I'm like, okay, well, we're clearly going to have some time travel because it's the Legion right. of Superheroes that undoes this.
Right.
You know, because obviously, you know, they kill a lot of characters in this yeah. book, like in the Watchtower, Green Arrow, Black Canary, Cyborg, Blue Beetles, and, you know, Mr. Terrific are all there, and they get murdered, and then Martha Kent. Gets murdered, but you know, then you realize it's all in his head. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes more sense. But yeah. But you know, for me, I wanted to talk about this book because I was very curious how you felt about the end,
about Superboy Prime showing up. You know, I know that we had some Superboy Prime fatigue, you know, previously, you know, several yeah. years back. But I like Superboy Prime. Mm-hmm. I think he's a really interesting. I love. In Infinite Crisis,
yeah.
And you know, subsequent stories. In fact, I just recently, you know, ever since we did our big Man of Steel deep dive, you know, the John Byrne books, I've been going back and reading a lot of John Byrne's Superman books that followed. And one of the ones that I just finished reading maybe a week ago was his final Superboy story, where, you know, Superboy shunts Smallville off into a pocket universe to keep it alive, even though the crisis, you know, wiped out everything else. And, you know, that's really the foundational story, even though it's not a direct into Superboy Prime. It's kind of the foundation story for the creation of Superboy Prime, because they talk about the pocket universe, right? Anyway, I was, when I finished that up like a week ago, I'm like, man, kind of miss Superboy Prime. I wonder when we're going to get to see him again. And here it is, Paul, Superboy Prime. I'm excited. I think he's a great villain.
Yeah. And I loved, you know, it's funny because I, you know, to your point, we did have a little bit of fatigue with him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he popped up again, I think, in the
metal. He was everywhere all at one time.
Yeah, he was for a while. But I mean, he was great in Infinite Crisis. But, yeah. You know, the way that they brought him back into the storyline, I thought was great. Like, I this book ended up, I was totally caught off guard in actually many aspects of this book, but I did not see that ending coming.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's rare that I can say that this wasn't spoiled. You know, for me, I didn't see it coming. And so I loved that Superboy Prime popped up at the end of this book.
Same. Yeah, I did too. I was very happy with that.
So, you know, since we're talking about Superman, Aaron, that kind of begs to mind something I had a thought about this week, actually.
Oh dear.
So, you know, I am the only person on the podcast who did not care for the recent Superman movie.
Because you're dead inside.
Because I'm dead inside. But it also occurred to me, after seeing Fantastic Four this week, what my overall issue with Superman was. With that movie, I felt like I was watching a James Gunn movie featuring Superman.
Mm-hmm.
With Fantastic Four, I felt like I was watching a Fantastic Four movie. And I think for me, that's the difference is, you know, I felt like I was watching something that James Gunn, you know, would have made regardless of, you know, could have made regardless of the hero featured in it, you know, because it features all the James Gunn touches, the James Gunn humor, you know, his, you know, that kind of thing. Whereas I feel like in my mind, I think he prioritized the James Gunn of it all. And I'm not saying I dislike James Gunn, but it's one of the reasons I actually have issues with Guardians of the Galaxy past the first one, right? The first one felt original and unique and fun. And then, you know, once we got to the second one, I was like, okay, well, like he's just kind of like doing his thing, right? It's, and you know, like nothing could be taken too seriously for too long. There's always got to be a joke. There's always got to be a 70s or 80s hit that plays, you know, he's got such a distinct style. And I think I wanted to see a Superman movie, not a James Gunn movie.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, going into Fantastic Four, not to say that Matt Shankman doesn't bring, you know, a visual flair to the movie, because he absolutely does. But I felt like I was watching a Fantastic Four movie, you know, and the director was secondary to that.
Well, I appreciate that's how you feel. I can accept your words and your position based on your feelings. However, you are indeed wrong. I'm just going to let it go. I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let it go because I've moved on, Paul. I've moved on, and I can let you stew in your wrongness. I can let you marinate, luxuriate in your wrongness. I'm going to allow it because I want to talk about the wonder that is the Fantastic Four. Oh my God. I knew I was going to enjoy this movie. I had no idea I was going to enjoy it so much. I have fewer complaints about this movie than I did about my complaints are very small.
Yeah, I do have one complaint about Fantastic Four, which I'll get into here in a minute. But
yeah.
You know, I thought this was Fantastic Four to me.
I want to say a couple of things before I forget.
Yes.
And let me just say, this movie did a remarkable job of just being a film, right? It was so original in its conception and execution. The visual style of the film, you know, its place in a contemporary 1960, you know, in a world that never moved beyond space age, you know, beyond the space race. I loved the setting and the style. It's going to be so hard when these characters come over to the regular MCU to enjoy them outside of this setting. Because the setting was so fantastic, right?
So well done. Yes.
Oh my God. I mean, I wanted to live there. You know, it looked like an architectural digest. I loved the setting, I loved the styles. You know, I had a concern about Vanessa Kirby going in because she just didn't look the part of Susan Storm to me. All concerns were, you know, immediately wiped away in the film. I thought Vanessa Kirby was great. I thought the entire cast was great.
Yeah, and you know, I would say, you know, Vanessa Kirby for me. Sorry, I had thoughts on that piece real quick.
Go ahead.
Okay, Vanessa Kirby. I thought she was great. I thought her acting was great. I do think she's got a little bit of Nicole Kidman face with the plastic surgery, which, you know, for me, I don't love. But you know, I mean, because I found it a little bit distracting, or maybe she doesn't. I don't know. But she kind of felt like that to me. But yeah, I thought the cast, all four of them. And I mentioned this earlier about John Krasinski. I was really worried about Pedro Pascal in this role. I shouldn't have been.
Yeah, I was concerned about the Pedro Pascal of it all, simply for the fact that I think so very much of Pedro Pascal out there. You know, it's like, you know, he's everywhere. you know, and I thought he was great. I thought I legit felt like he disappeared into the role.
Reed Richards.
At no point did I go, oh, this is Pedro Pascal. It was Reed Richards. Just like I felt like Johnny Storm was Johnny Storm, Grimm was Ben Grimm. I really bought all of the actors in their roles. And I, you know, this it has been, you know, Kevin Feige's superpower, or maybe it's just, you know, a Marvel superpower in casting. And maybe this is why they think they can recast their iconic character. Because they do such a remarkable job. This cast was fantastic. And I don't mean to keep using that word, but everything about this movie was just amazing.
It was.
I cannot get over how much I enjoyed just about everything I saw on the screen. And I think that there were only a couple of missed opportunities. Now, that's how I'm going to characterize my complaints, as missed opportunities. I think there's a fundamental missed opportunity in the representation of Galactus. I did not care for the Galactus ship. I really wanted it to be more Jack Kirby-esque. I wanted it to be more, you know, this all looked, you know, dingy and terrible, like a Borg ship almost.
Yeah.
You know, it's all very depressing, whereas that is not how Jack Kirby drew that at all. You know, it was all fantastic and science, mind-bending. I wanted that representation of the ship. It winds up being a minor complaint, but I just hated how, you know, it was the contrast between how fantastical Manhattan was, you know, back on Earth versus, you know, the Galactus ship. And I wanted them to experience their own level of awe, like, oh my gosh. Look at all this science, you know, and then you find, you know, it's, you know, this just, it's almost like a mining ship. And in fact, it actually, and more so than the Borg, reminded me of the ship in Star Trek 2009 that, that the Romulan mining ship, right?
Yeah.
I kind of hate that. And I hate how dark it is. I wanted it to be brighter. I wanted to be able to see all of the fantastic high science stuff. So that was one missed opportunity. The other missed opportunity that I think, you know, Marvel kind of built itself, you know, in, you know, the Easter eggs. And, you know, the common Easter to during his lifetime was Stan Lee guesting in one of the Marvel movies, you know, appear in everything up until, you know, he passed away.
Yeah.
I think this would have been a great opportunity because there is film and video of Jack and Stan in the 60s. I would have loved to for them to have worked Jack and Stan into a crowd scene, you know, into
or on
one
the TV
of,
somewhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just being able to see them. They did a lovely job that, you know, having a memoriam of Jack Kirby at the end of the film. You know, I thought that was great. I just think that was a missed opportunity. I would have liked to have seen in the movie.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that one. I feel like another missed opportunity for me, actually the biggest missed opportunity that I have, is I felt like Silver Surfer Well, I did like the interpretation of the character. I did like visuals of Silver Surfer in this film. I think they did when Silver Surfer was on screen. I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed, you know, the representation. I feel like there wasn't enough fleshing out of that character.
I really liked that she's Shalabal. You know, yeah. I know there was a lot of concern earlier on. We made this. This is an alternate universe. You know, and it's very clear, you know, number one, by the way, Paul, I don't know if you caught this or not, but it's Earth 828. They named the Earth after me because that's my birthday.
That's also Jack happens. Kirby's birthday. But, yeah,
you know. Whatever. It's after me, though. you know, great big Fantastic Four fan. I thought I was very impressed with the art direction around the Silver Surfer. I thought she every time she did something, you know, the board dynamics and, you know,
the actual surfing, right? I like that.
Was great. And let me tell you, Paul, I was in my theater and the scene, spoilers, by the way, the scene where she knocks Johnny out of the way, saving him and, you know, knocking us back through the bridge, the crowd cheered. There was applause and cheering in my auditorium. And I went, oh yeah, this movie's going to do okay.
Yeah. You know, for me, I felt like that could have been a bit more earned. I would, you know, and that's the thing, like, you're actually talking to someone who I did like the, you know, the interpretation of the Fantastic Four where Doug Jones played Silver Surfer. And that's not the greatest movie, obviously. I know that, but like, I feel like Silver Surfer's turn in this movie wasn't as fleshed out as I would have liked it to be. I feel like, you know, the character, you know, basically is bad except for like 10 seconds where Johnny, you know, kind of like gets through to her and then you don't see her come back until she saves the day. And I, you know, again, I think it was fine, but I think as a Silver Surfer super fan, I would have liked to have fleshed out that character more. Now, obviously there's only but so much room in a film already featuring four leads. And no character, none of those leads did I feel got shorted in screen time or character moments. But the fifth character of Silver Surfer, I feel, got shorted in the grand scheme of things.
I think we saw enough of her. I think we're going to obviously see more in the future. I very much enjoyed her. I was surprised how much on screen. I enjoy, you know, that Shalabal gets her own sort of origin story and motivation. And at no point is Norrin Rod mentioned, right? You know, she shows that she has a child and that's her motivation, you know, to save the world of Zen Law. You know, you never see, I did it for too. No, Norrin Rod wasn't even mentioned. kind of amused by that. But I think another huge thing, I mentioned that the movie kind of exists on its own. You know, it's good despite being a Marvel movie. It's you can watch this movie never having seen it. That's one of the beautiful things about it. And another thing that I love, unlike any other Marvel movie except perhaps Black Panther, this movie had a memorable soundtrack.
Yes,
the music in this movie brings so much character to the film. The Michael Giacchino, I'm like, oh, buying that album because it's fantastic. I know I keep saying that word and I don't mean to.
It's true.
it is a wonderful score. I have faulted the Marvel movies time and again because of how forgettable a lot of the music is in those movies. I mean, it's almost like it's generated by AI. And I know it's, but you know, other than a couple of and Black Panther, those scores have been rather formidable, and this one was just fantastic.
I agree. The score on this film, I was looking, you know, because I do collect certain, you know, albums on vinyl.
Yep.
I don't see a vinyl release for it yet, which feels like a big missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Maybe I just haven't, you know, maybe I've missed it, but I went to the usual suspects like Mondo, you know, that usually releases this type of thing. And I didn't see anything listed there, but it is just a great, great movie score.
Yeah.
And this entire film, I loved. I loved it from beginning to end. I do know that there were things trimmed out of the movie. I don't know how much, but obviously John Malkovich was originally cast as the Red Ghost, and they removed his scenes entirely. I don't feel like anything was missing. But
And hopefully we'll get an extended cut. I know they don't normally do that with the Marvel movies, but I would love to see an extended cut where we get to see those scenes, because I think that's actually something that's missing a little bit from the film, is the Fantastic Four being the Fantastic Four before the desperate world crisis that is Galactus. I love that the movie isn't ashamed to honor its roots, that it's honoring the comic book. And I think that's the success of Superman, is it's not embarrassing a Superman story, right? It's not embarrassed about his red trunks, right? Yeah. We're not embarrassed about, the kaiju-sized space alien that's coming to eat the planet and the silver chick on a surfboard. We're not ashamed of that. We're honored, proud of it. We're excited about it. I love that they really the nerdiness of the Fantastic Four and how exciting science is. That's one of the things. I mean, we have so much time with Pedro Pascal at the chalkboard. I kind of dug that.
I did too. I loved it.
Yeah.
For me, the biggest surprise of this film was the fact that Pedro Pascal really embodied Reed Richards.
Yeah.
Genuinely embodied the Reed Richards as the Reed Richards I like the interpretation of, right? He still harbors guilt. He's awkward. He's always thinking. He weighs every scenario. This is the Jonathan Hickman Reed Richards, and I really appreciated that about his interpretation of the character, because I hope that they lean on that Jonathan Hickman run.
I think the only other missed opportunity that I would call out is I don't understand why we didn't get an Alicia Masters character and instead got the Natasha Lyonne character. And I think I'm getting the actress's name right. Yeah. Natasha Lyonne. I'm like, why? I mean, what's wrong with Alicia? And I was trying to rack my mind, like, why wouldn't, I think Alicia is so interesting. If you're going to create a possible romance for Ben Grimm, I don't understand why it wouldn't be
And I don't know why Latasha Lyonne's character couldn't literally just be called Alicia Masters.
Is it Latasha or Natasha?
Natasha. Sorry. Natasha Lyonne. Okay. Yeah. Natasha Lyonne. I don't know why she couldn't have just been Alicia Masters. Yeah. There was nothing about that character that was, that was distinguishable, that they couldn't have just made her blind. Right. Yeah. That would have been taken away because she was blind. So I found it, I do find that was an odd choice.
Maybe it was because it was an actress over the character thing, that they wanted, they knew that they wanted Natasha Lyonne, and they did not want to have a sighted person playing the role of a blind person when they're, were obviously, blind actors.
No, that's possible.
I'm sure that's probably what it was, but I'm like, what does Natasha Lyonne bring to this that another actress would not have? I mean, I know she's having kind of a, but I was like, come on.
but it's not like she was advertised to be in the film, right? So it was
right. That's my thing. It's not like anybody bought a ticket. Yeah, it's not like anybody bought a ticket going, well, what's for? But Natasha Lyonne's in, so I will.
Yeah,
I don't get that.
Yeah, some that was an odd choice for sure.
Yeah,
but I think the thing about this movie that kind of concerned me, and we talked about it when the casting was announced, is that they hired all these actors who were hot now.
Yeah,
right. You've got Eben Moss Bachrach from the Bear. You've got Joseph Quinn from Stranger Things and Gladiator 2 and A Quiet Place. And you've got Pedro Pascal, who's also in everything, also in Gladiator 2, funny enough. And Vanessa Kirby, who's riding high on the Mission Impossible stuff.
Yeah,
it's like you hired all these people who are hot now, but then they gelled so well. And if you see interviews with them, like, they genuinely have embraced this like family feel. They like each other, and of course, they're doing all this press. They're literally actively filming Avengers Doomsday right now as well.
Yeah.
So they are continuing on as these characters and continuing to grow closer, as friends and in this family atmosphere. And I think that's great. I was worried about this casting, and now I find that these actors really embodied the roles absolutely effectively.
there is genuine chemistry between Vanessa Kirby and Pedro Pascal.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you can, but it is believable that those people are naked together, you know, and just like there's chemistry amongst all four of them. You can tell they like each other. They enjoy each other. You know, that's
the thing is computer generated. That's the crazy thing. There's genuine chemistry when literally one of the characters is computer generated.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good stuff.
It is. It's really great. It's a great movie. So, highly recommend.
Here's my thing. You've got this amazing cast. Mm-hmm. They're going to be in Avengers Day, and I gather the film that comes after.
Secret War. Mm-hmm.
But they're going to reset the Marvel Universe after that. I imagine they're probably going to recast Fantastic Four. So we really only got two more movies with this cast, and they're large ensemble casts.
Possibly. I mean, that would be a poor choice, but possibly.
I mean, I figured the opportunity, if you're to reset the timeline, if you're going to recast your heroes so that you've got younger actors and you know redo all of this stuff, I think one of your opportunities, Fantastic Four there at the beginning, right? And that beggars that you're going to have those characters. And that makes sense then for hiring somebody who is as old as Pedro Pascal. Not that he's an old person, but you know, he's a little longer than you would want for someone that you're hoping to screen for, right? Anyway, I think my head's at, and I wish we were going to get another standalone Fantastic Four movie with this cast, but I don't think we're gonna.
I mean, hey, you never know. Hopefully, you know, I mean, they might just, you know, take a DCU tact to it and only reboot the parts that they need to, kind of thing. You know, the one thing that I do hope, and it based on the sound, based on the titles of the films, you know, I think one of the things that worked so well for me with Infinity War and Endgame is that, you know, they basically just embraced the Jonathan Hickman of it all, right? We had the Black Order. You know, we had an interpretation of Thanos, even though, you know, obviously inspired by the George Perez, Jim Starlin, Infinity Gauntlet storyline. But really that those two films were probably more inspired by Jonathan Hickman's more recent run, right?
Yeah.
I really hope they borrow from Hickman's Secret Wars and, you know, his Fantastic Four run for what we have coming next in these movies. You know, for Doomsday, you know, I feel like it's a little tricky because the only buildup we've had for the major event really is this movie. I mean, yeah, we've had characters hint at the multiverse and stuff like that. But, you know, because of the pivot away from Kang, we haven't really had a buildup for Doom being Doom the way we did with Thanos, who was literally teased in the first Avengers film. So, we haven't had as much buildup. So hopefully what they're going to feature, you know, with these two movies will be worth it. And, you know, you mentioned the cheering when Silver Surfer saves the day. For me, the biggest cheer in the film was Dr. Doom. In the mid-credit sequence.
Yeah. I really wish that he had turned and you'd gotten to see a little bit of RDJ there, but,
I'm going to guess that was, well, even though, you know, it was apparently filmed by the Russo brothers, and I don't know if you know, obviously we all stayed through the credits. The score in that scene was actually not by Michael Giacchino. It was by Jerry Goldsmith, I think, whoever's doing the score for the Avengers movie. So, you know, it was like filmed separately. But I'm curious if RDJ was even in that. Like, I would imagine probably not.
That would be my guess. That would be my guess. But I love the film. I thought it was good stuff. I think my movie going is over.
Forever.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, what else is there? There's no other Marvel.
There's no DC.
Yeah.
You know, we really don't have much until,
I mean, I guess we've got Predator Badlands, but,
we do have Predator Badlands. You know, I think about what's coming up, right? As we kind of get into the rest of the year, you know, we obviously don't really have another Marvel movie until Avengers Doomsday, right? Which I believe
next December.
Next December got to, so that's the, we don't have another Marvel movie for a year and a half. Now we do get a Star Wars movie in that time.
Yeah.
You know, we do get Mandalorian and Grogu that comes out in,
and we do I get believe, Supergirl. Right? Supergirl's next March, Supergirl. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, as far as, you know, that type of cinema, that's and that we don't get a ton of that. I mean, you know, what's coming up left in the summer? I mean, I think summer's effectively, you know, for big releases, you know, we're kind of getting into the August of it all, where there's not as much,
right,
you know, coming together. You know, if I don't know if there's the Naked Gun, if you want to see the Naked Gun, I'm quite excited about Weapons. Nobody 2, you know, there's a couple.
I can't wait for Nobody 2. I am deeply into Nobody 2.
Yeah, there's a couple of, like, you know, lesser, you know, not big budget, you know, event movies coming out that certainly, you know, I want to check out. But yeah, it's going to be that things are definitely going to slow down a little bit in the comic book sci-fi world.
Hmm. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, Aaron, nothing.
Not a damn thing.
So, you know, I was looking at next week's comics, and unless Comixology is like actively updating or something, you know, next week is a fifth week, right, for July. So, you know, as far as releases, there's literally nothing. A few trade, like, which is unusual. Usually there's at least something, you know, like a couple of like random, you know, annuals or something like that. There is not a single comic release. So I've got to imagine that, I don't know, that maybe, you know, the Comixology isn't updating or anything, or you know, or is active, you know, hasn't refreshed for next week's releases. Cause it's, if this is true, then yes, not a damn thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about Fantastic Four. Give us a shout at Ideology. Leave your comments on the show. You could win a Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Paul, I had a fantastic time talking to you today about Fantastic.
This has been a fantastic episode of Funny Books with Dan and Polly.
It has. It's been fantastic.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. All right.
We'll catch you guys have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.